And welcome to this election coverage series as we continue, right, Sherry, on our unique election coverage for
Yes.
North Dallas, I guess. And today we have a really, really good show, one that I've been waiting for. Last week's show was pretty good. We had HD 67, the Democratic primary candidates. That was exciting. They were very cordial with each other,
Yes,
weren't
they
they?
were. They were.
There is nice at the end. They took pictures. Hopefully, you guys at the end we get some pictures with you guys. But it was nice. They all hung around for a little bit. It's kind of hard to discern between them, but we got to see a little bit of their personality. So that was really good. And that's what we're trying to do here, common ground. So, everybody, welcome to this special election coverage with our incumbent, Jared Patterson, HD 106, and the challenger in the Republican primary, James Trumbly. Welcome, James. Jared, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having
And
us.
oh, my pleasure. We're going to let you just introduce yourselves for a little bit. So, Jared, start off for about a minute, and then we'll give James a bit about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Jared Patterson. I'm the current state representative in House District 106. I'm right smack dab in the middle of my freshman term. So I was just elected 2 years ago, 2018. I served one term in the Texas legislature. My wife is Leslie. She is a preschool teacher at a church in Frisco. She taught in public school for 6 years. Stayed at home with our kids for about 9 years, and then now she's back teaching. She's got 10 4-year-olds that she teaches.
Wow.
We have three kids.
Just 10?
Yeah, I know, right? I couldn't handle it. There's
Take
no
me out
way.
too.
We've got three little kids, 9, 6, and 5, Austin, Reagan, and McKinley. And they are at Vaughn Elementary. Our two oldest are at Vaughn in Frisco ISD, and our youngest one will be there next year. So
And you're finishing your first term, right?
first term in the Texas House, yes.
Okay, and James, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I started off, joining the Marine Corps. I spent 4 years with them, three combat tours, then 10 years overseas as a contractor after that. I've been married 16 years. I got two boys at 14 and 11. My wife is an amazing person. She's truly the American dream. She was born in Mexico. Her family, yeah, got held up pretty bad with the cartel down there, and her mom brought her and her seven siblings legally to California, and they all are, contributing citizens, and became citizens themselves. It took them like years of fighting to finally stand there
I
and be able
bet.
to raise her hand and become a United States citizen,
Well,
which is very
congratulations to
proud.
her. That's
Thanks.
great.
Yeah, she's definitely my best asset and my better half by far. So, but that's a little about me. We've been in Texas about 13 years here. We moved to Frisco after I was stationed out in Camp Pendleton, California. There was no way we were staying there, and so that's what brought us here.
Wow. So again, thank you for your service to this country. We appreciate that. And
Thank
that's
you.
an exciting
Absolutely.
story. I'm going to start out right in the beginning then. I'll present this to you, James. So you're both Republicans and Jared's been in for one term. And for the most part, I guess people have seemed pretty happy with him. But obviously you want to challenge his position. What do you see that Jared hasn't done in office that you would like to do instead?
Yeah, it's a lot of things when we looked at the last session. Obviously, it was a purple session across the board. We didn't really get the big problems that we need solved, right? I mean, you want to talk property tax reform? We're still paying more in taxes here in Denton County on average, right? So that wasn't a solution. We're still getting families getting taxed out of their homes. We look at, the constitutional carry, securing our border, pro-life. I mean, these are all bills that couldn't even make it to the floor. And everyone's talking about how the Democrats are our biggest threat. It really isn't. Right now, our biggest threat to the Republican Party are the rhinos inside of it, the ones that are not fighting to make sure that we get our Republican priorities passed. Now, so when we started looking at the record, we saw, Jared came out of last session, and he talked about, how great a session it was, and we all know it wasn't. It really concerned us when he was talking about being the Democrats' favorite freshman. How he mentioned, one of his best friends in the House was Representative Gonzalez, which she is a, pro-abortion, open-border, socialist Democrat. And so when we start wondering why we can't get Republican priorities passed, is because we don't have people really fighting for our priorities, right? So there was a couple of things through the last session that, we saw the votes we didn't like. He voted to raise our budget.
I hate to interrupt you. There's a
Yeah.
lot there. So
Sorry.
I don't, there's a lot of topics. So one of the ones that I brought out, I'd like to ask Jared about is, I guess you're alluding to the fact that you think he's a rhino, but he was voted, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, the number 8 most conservative Republican in the House. So is that something that you run across, Jared, that are or is it just your competitor that thinks you're a rhino, or is that something that you need to compete against? Because I don't want to take your answer, but I know that you have reached across the aisle, and there are mixed feelings about that from, you know, both sides. Some people like that, some people don't. Obviously, you know, very conservative Republicans want to stay very focused, and some are okay. So I'll let you answer that part of it.
Yeah, and then I'm going to have to say something.
Okay, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think James is absolutely right about one thing, and that is that a lot of times the problem is not with the Democrats. A lot of time the problem is with the Republican Party. We have a lot of Republicans that go down there and campaign on one thing, and then when they get down there, they do something completely different. And they don't support the things that they told the voters that they would support. They don't support the things in the party platform. I'm not one of those Republicans. I went down there and I did exactly what I said I would do. I co-authored major pieces of legislation that are priorities for the grassroots Republicans in the state of Texas, like constitutional carry, like the heartbeat bill, like banning red light cameras, and a host of other things. And so I co-authored those bills. Now, they didn't get as far as I would have liked to have seen them. We did pass banning red light cameras, but a couple of those bills didn't get as far as I would like to have seen them. But, you know, I don't control every single aspect of the Texas House. I will say this. We did solve some big problems this year. We had a very successful session as it relates to the number one priority of Texans, and that was property tax reform. And I'm sure we'll have time to get into that later in the show, but the details of property tax reform. That was the most substantial change to our property tax system since the 1980s. And so that was a huge win for voters.
So do you want to say something before I ask a follow-up?
No, because I'm sitting in my brain trying to figure out how I'm going to
responsibly. Based on what Jared said, that he feels, of course, that it was a very successful session, and you obviously have some doubts, and that's why you're running. What do you have to say about the reduction in property tax? Because you did mention that in your open.
Well, actually, the way I'd like to hear that answer is what would you do differently? Because that's in my head, and I think a lot of voters I get where you're coming from as far as Republican ideals, but at the same time, is that successful right now? All things considered, is it possible right now? All things considered. And if so, what does it look like? That's
the property tax reform. We see it more as addressing a symptom, not the problem. You know, as I said before, we're still paying more in taxes on average in Denton County than before. So what we need to do is actually have the property tax reduction into it. Now, our first thing that we want to do for the district is eliminate the appraisal districts. All right, because we feel that right there is an immediate solution that's going to freeze the property taxes from growing and taxing families out of their homes. And at that point, it's also going to change the light on what the real issues are, because the cities do control the property taxes amount, right, the percentage of it. But right now, everybody blames the appraisal districts. Well, they're rightfully so, because, I mean, we have unelected, you know, faceless bureaucrats that get to determine the value of our home and then send us a surprise bill at the end of the year.
So what would you do differently, as Sherry said? So you're UNC legislator Patterson, and I'm not saying he will, but you do, and you're in there, and now you get to call the shot. You know what? This is one of the top priorities for you. What are you going to introduce as legislature to fix that?
The first thing we want to do is eliminate the appraisal districts, and then we need to start tackling the property taxes. They're just out of control at this point. So we do need to hit it in the more of the symptom and more of the base of it.
All right. So how do you answer that?
Yeah, a few things on that. You know, first of all, as soon as you pass a piece of legislation, it doesn't go into effect immediately. A lot of things that we did last session go into effect in 2020 and in 2021. So if you look at the caps, for example, let me back up just a second. So if you put all of this in context, let's put it all in context. In 2017, they tried to pass property tax reform in the Texas House and in the Texas Senate. It was a number one priority for Texans 2 years ago, as it's been for a long time. The Senate was stuck at reducing the amount of property taxes that local governments can raise from 8% down to 4%. The House was stuck at 6%. So the previous law was they could raise your residential property taxes by 8%. Senate wanted to go to 4, House wanted to go to 6. They were at a stalemate. The governor actually called a special session after 2017. They still couldn't get anything done. The former Speaker of the House ended the special session without getting anything done. This session, we exceeded all expectations. We didn't reduce it to 6% increase or 4% increase. We reduced it to a 3.5% increase on cities and counties and a 2.5% increase on school districts being the predominant place that you pay your property taxes to. Keep in mind, the state of Texas does not set any property tax rates in the state of Texas, but we build the framework in which that they can work around. So we reduced that dramatically lower than what anyone thought that we would have going into session. And on top of it, the cherry on top was we put $5 billion worth of property tax relief out of HB 3, which if you live in Frisco ISD, I voted to reduce and actually co-authored the bill to reduce your property tax rate by 11 cents this year. So if you look at your tax statement that you got in April of 2019, and you look at the check that you had to write in the end of 2019, due January 31st of this year, it was lower by 11 cents on your school district property tax rate because of a bill that I passed.
What do you have to say about that? Is everything he's saying accurate? Is there something that you would do differently?
Well, the numbers there, I mean, obviously they're accurate. They're numbers. But when you're going house to house and you're talking to the actual teachers and first responders here, they're packing up. They're moving. They can't afford to stay here. And they've been here for like 10 years.
That's true.
And that's why the biggest problem, I feel, is the appraisal districts at this point. We can stop that. It doesn't, I mean, you want to cap the 3.5% and bring it to the voters. That's great. But that didn't solve the problem. We're still having families that are moving out of our district, moving out of Texas.
Is that not somewhat a result of supply and demand? Like if there's somebody else willing to pay more for the house and someone
or pay more taxes, right?
Yeah.
But again, it doesn't change the value of your home by eliminating appraisal districts. So when you buy your home, that's your set price. So you know what you're going to be able to budget for your family. So whether you're 5 years, 10 or 20 years, you're still paying the same amount, right?
Right.
No, so and then your value of home goes up. If they want to move and sell their home for a profit, great. I mean, that's what's great about America. We can do that. But the problem is when these teachers and these first responders, and they've been here for 10 years, and they're the ones that are building the city, and they can't even afford to live here anymore. Not on their own. It's not like they changed anything. They're still making the same amount of money,
you know,
but the value of their homes are increasing significantly, and they're paying the tax amount on that value. And it's kicking them right out. And it's a problem.
Well, look, James is not wrong about the problem. I mean, he's identified the problem, and that is that property taxes have gone up too much, too quickly. And that is a real issue for people in this district. Absolutely identified the problem. The question is, how do you solve it? And, you know, this is a major policy difference with James and myself, because I don't believe in a California style property tax system, which is what he's proposing. If you look at what they did in California, when you have properties that are, you know, number one, valued on what you bought it for, you can have the same exact house right next door to the next one valued tremendously higher than the other one. Number two, and this is probably a difference in conservative philosophy, it's not the government's business. When I enter into a private contract with another individual to sell my property, it's not the government's business to know what I sold my property for. Now, if they want to try to value that up higher, I can submit documentation to prove it. But you've got to keep in mind that all of this has to be placed in context. This issue of your appraised value going up dramatically is a newer issue in the state of Texas. I remember when I bought my first home in Texas, you know, the appraised value was significantly lower than what I gave for it. Now,
mine has always been, even here, not significantly lower, but my appraised value has always been lower than what I can sell it for.
Well, absolutely. And so I don't want to, you know, if my appraised value is lower, why would I want to have to be forced to turn over my contracts to the government and then raise my taxes up to what I actually paid for the home?
So I just want to enter James. So he mentioned
that's not the case.
Is that the style
if you talk to a lot of people that actually go and fight this?
Right.
I mean, we have a rate of over 88% of the people win, right? So at that point, that means that they're appraising their homes higher than what their homes actually sell for.
Right.
I mean, it's across the board. And the burden of proof should be on us. And if you want to talk about, you know, governments being involved.
Oh, I agree there.
The government should be involved in taxing us out of our homes either. So there is a problem here, and that needs to be fixed. And it is a conflict of interest, and there's even corruption throughout Texas where you've seen lawsuits where the municipals are going to the appraisal districts and finding out that they're inflating the values of the home so they can create more revenue for the cities.
Right. So
that's a really good point. Let me jump on that. That's sure. A really good point that he just said. There is an amount of corruption at the appraisal district level. You know, we actually had a situation here in Denton County where the chief appraiser for Denton County was the mayor of Louisville.
Yeah.
So you talk about a conflict of interest. You know, he's sitting there as the mayor of Louisville hoping that home values go up.
Well, he had to step down from the mayor to go.
We banned it this session. I mean, we did some appraisal district reform. This actually Senator Pat Fallon authored that bill. You can imagine got a little hot water here in Denton County because, and now he doesn't represent Louisville, but he's been in Denton County for a long time.
Yeah,
so it's so we banned that this session. But I mean, you could imagine, and then you have elected officials serving, you know, city elected officials in some cases serving on appraisal district boards. Yep. And it's the same thing. So, yeah,
so you both called another reactive, you know, instead of being proactive.
Right. So you're saying basically, it's just so I know your positions on it. So you both want to do something about appraisal districts. You want to eliminate the appraisal district. And what do you want to do?
Yeah. So I filed a bill last session that would dramatically slow the growth in the appraised value of our home. So I filed a bill that would average, it would be a rolling 5-year average on your home is what you would pay on your property taxes. Look, I would love to sit here and say, I want to eliminate property taxes or I want to eliminate appraisal districts. The reality is that those types of changes just aren't going to happen. I mean, you've got to get your bill through committee. You've got to get the committee to hear it. You've got to get it voted out of committee. You've got to get 76 votes in the House. You still got to go through the Senate. You've got the governor to sign off on it. Major.
To be a fighter.
Well,
to actually fight the bill.
For well, it. Let's see what James has to say.
But that's actually not true. I mean, you know, what it takes is it takes someone with a mature, and I'm not saying you're not, but it takes someone with a mature sense about them to be able to build bridges and build relationships. And I think that I proved that this session. I mean, if you sit here and knock personalities of people in our own party, if you knock people personally in the other party, a lot of people have a lot of power down there to kill your legislation.
Okay, so Jared's basically saying diplomacy is where he's coming from.
Sure. And you know, I've worked in the government for 10 years with multiple different government agencies with multiple different sectors at a given time. I know exactly what it takes to build the bridges, to build the relationships, to get the mission completed.
So what would you
do? That's the problem. That's exactly what I do. You just got to be on it. And you have to be transparent about it. You know, and let the people know of your district that you are fighting. This is what's going on. This is what's holding it up. Hold them accountable. Hold their feet to the fire. Don't just put your name on something and then come home and be like, well, I don't like how where it went. Maybe next year. I mean, that's not the answer. We don't see people yelling from the top of the hill in Austin like these people here are holding it up. This is the problem. This is what's going on. This is the relationships we need to build. This is the person in your district that's holding this up. So let's go ahead and fight and make sure we get somebody in your district that's going to fight for us.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth. So you're saying one piece at a time, and you're part of that new group of Republicans that need to come in and really fight hard where you're saying, and I'm not saying yes or no, that Jared is more taking of the more diplomacy route, the slower route, you would take a more aggressive route. Is that basically
I'm a very direct person, yes.
Is that pretty much summarize that, Jared? Or
I think that summarizes his point of view. I mean, I definitely employed diplomacy where I could. You know, I fought for issues like standardized testing reform. That's not an R versus D issue. You know, that's where I talked about, you know, building bridges with members of the other party because, you know, I found a member of the Texas House that was passionate about standardized testing reform. I think our STAR tests are ridiculous. I think that they're not fair to teachers. They're not fair to children in our schools.
We have common ground.
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted to shift away from talking about property taxes and let's go into the old education conversation. Mm-hmm. All right. So we heard the word reno dropped. I want to know what, if that's the case, where your thoughts are on the whole education voting, because I know Jared is being accused or things are being said, but at the same time, when you go and look at some of the reports on education, he didn't get like the shining report that he's all pro, yes, everything. So I want to know, how do I connect those dots? And also, what do you both have to say about the actual status of education in our state right now? And quite honestly, the Republican Party has kind of been leader of that little train for about 15 years now, maybe longer, I don't know.
Since 03.
So me, as someone who doesn't speak party, who do I blame? Who do I go to? Who do I yell at to get it better and fix it?
Who do you want to answer first?
Okay, I don't care.
So point.
I'll jump in there. And let me just say, there were plenty of times where I fought. There were plenty of times where I was in the back hall talking to chairman, talking to other members, fighting things. There was a ridiculous amendment on the property tax issue where they wanted to, instead of the 3.5%, they tied it to all these different metrics. It would have been so complicated, you couldn't even explain it, and it wouldn't have been a better deal. So there were fights. It's just, I'm not the guy that every time the camera's on, I feel like I've got to be in front of the camera. Most of what happens there happens behind the scenes. But talking about education there specifically, we had the best session ever for public education in the state of Texas's history. I mean, we spent $11 billion on pumping it into the public education system, $5 billion of which went to property tax relief. A chunk of that money was reserved for raises for our teachers, our librarians, our nurses, and our counselors. You saw more money funneled to the classroom. You saw teacher raises. You saw a significant drop in Robin Hood. This past session, 47% over the next biennium, which starts this year, a reduction in Robinhood payments. Actually took Frisco out of having to pay Robinhood at all this year. They would have sent millions of dollars to the state in Robinhood. So we had a massive win for public education. I actually got two bills signed into law that were pro-public education bills, signed into law by Governor Abbott. I got four bills total out of the public education committee. Someone like me who's deeply conservative but doesn't lob bombs because there weren't many conservatives on that committee. So I was able to actually navigate that committee, work with my superintendents, and get four bills passed through that committee.
And James, what does James have to say?
Well, I mean, obviously I can't speak to Austin because I wasn't there last session, but I can speak to the teachers that I'm talking to right now, and they're not feeling it. I mean, $100 a month, a raise of what they're getting right now in Frisco doesn't even cover the property taxes that we're supposed to have, right? Prosper, the teachers didn't get a raise. Most of this money that came down to went to fatten the walls of the builders and the administrators. There wasn't specific enough inside the bills to go directly to the classroom. We still have teachers that are paying out of pocket for supplies in their kids. And it's ridiculous. We still got teachers that can't afford to live here. I mean, our district here has some of the greatest school districts in Texas. We're going to lose that. We're going to lose that because we're losing the teachers. They're moving out. I mean, we had a lot of Frisco ISD teachers move to Prosper. We have people from Prosper that are moving up to the Sherman area. They have to get out because they have to get away from the taxes. All right. So these bills that we're doing, it's great to pump around $11 billion, $5 billion, whatever it may be, but it didn't go directly to the classrooms where it should. It gets filtered through the administrators. By the time it gets to the teachers, they're left with scraps, and they're not feeling it. I mean, they are literally having to move out of their homes, out of these districts. We're not being specific enough in these bills and helping the teachers and helping the students and helping reform the education side of it. That's what we need to do.
Sounds like James needs to run for school board in Frisco then. I mean, here's the bottom line. We made sure that 30% of the money that went into that bill to each school district had to go to the classroom. So that means more money for teachers and all that. It didn't get held up in the administrative level. Now, if the additional money got held up in the administrative level, then that's on the school board. You know,
is there any audit process that was implemented at all?
Yeah, there's several components. Actually, in talking about audits, if the school district is going to raise your taxes moving forward, they actually have to have an efficiency audit now to make sure that they're spending the money wisely.
Right, that I heard. But I'm saying as far as spending the money from that
bill. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's law. It's law in the bill. So, I mean, look, the state of Texas does not micromanage each individual school district specifically. We have an elected board of representatives that serves on a school board that does that. All we can do is craft the law and build the law to make it say a certain thing. If they don't go by the law, then that's where we come in and we can reprimand them. Look at what is happening in Houston ISD right now. The state of Texas is taking over Houston ISD because they have drastically failed the children in that district.
Would you have put any safeguards in? Is that what you're saying, James, that you would have put some parameters in to safeguard where the spending is that the legislature didn't do?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's what we have to do. You know, we can't just give them the buckets of money to the school administrators because, again, we're not seeing it go all the way we're supposed to. And, you know, as a state rep and as a representative of this district, you can get involved in that. Right. There's no reason why you can't get involved into the school systems and into the, you know, the ISDs, into the city councils and making sure, hold them accountable. Again, it's about holding people's feet to the fire, make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. You know, when we look at and we see, you know, brand new administration, and you're right, it is the school board and that is an issue of it. But again, it's one of those things, why are we not getting more involved in that and making sure they're doing what they're supposed to do and help our teachers? Now, that's the issues I have. Again, it comes down to the lack of fight, you know, is that lack of that extra step. You know, when you go in there and just, you know, co-authored or you check the box somewhere and I get it, that's not enough. As I sit today, I still don't have constitutional carry. Our border's still not secured. You know, we're still having a higher budget. I'm still paying more in taxes. I mean, we're not seeing results. And we literally have had the majority in the House and the Senate and the governor's office for years now.
But do you think maybe is that because of the people that are there doing the job, or do you think it's because the people that are doing their job are actually reflecting what the public wants? Because talking about constitutional carry, as a voter, I get frustrated because I don't understand. Maybe you two being Republicans can tell me how to understand this. So I don't want my state to tell me what to do when it comes to being able to carry a firearm into a private entity owned by someone else. Mm-hmm. But I do want them to tell me what they can and can't do when that private entity has the ability to not sell a cake to a certain person. What do I do with that? Because it's the same mentality, flip-flop, right?
Nah, I mean, I don't agree with that. I mean, I think that, you know, if I'm running my business, that I should be able to run my business in accordance with my religious beliefs, which is what you brought up.
Absolutely.
So, you know, if I'm running a business that has a level of artistic ability to it, you know, cake making or whatever, that and someone brings me, but I'm just saying, I mean, I'm using the example that you gave. Someone brings something that I don't agree with in my religion, I should be able to refuse that service to for my professional services to be rendered in that manner that goes against my
religion. I get that.
Beliefs.
What if that same religion doesn't support that whole firearm situation?
Well, they don't have to carry one.
No, they don't have to carry one. And the other thing is,
don't they have the right to refuse the ability to enter their
absolutely. Property? Absolutely. I said, look, your property, sure look, my right to carry does not take away your private property rights. If you don't want me to carry on your private property, then I shouldn't be allowed to carry it. And, you know, if outside of the Hateful Eight, you know, echo chamber on some of the Frisco politics Facebook groups
wow.
who get my position
he said that, not us.
who get my position wrong on this nonstop.
Got it.
You know, that's just not true. What constitutional carry is it says the Constitution states that you have the right to keep and bear arms and that it shall not be infringed. Moreover, Article 1, Section 23 of the state's Constitution says that the state has the only authority that the state has on regulating arms is the wearing of arms. So the state of Texas doesn't even have the authority to regulate your guns other than the wearing of arms themselves.
So is that what you're talking about, James, about the Constitution carry, about wearing your arms?
Yeah, and there are some, you know, the processes of actually getting your license and the fees. I mean, a lot of that, you know, whether it be true or not, I mean, I know the most common reason why we started doing licensing and fees was to, you know, segregate from the poorer communities, right? Because they couldn't do it. Kind of like back in the day with the voting tax, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of the same thing. So why are we restricting some people can afford it and other people can't?
So you're making it more like Oklahoma? Is that
I'm not familiar with Oklahoma's laws.
We don't hear about
that. Yeah, it's not.
I'm just saying.
Right? So, no, I don't think we're in the nation of Texas. I don't think we're
That's right. Secession. Did someone say secession?
Yeah.
Right. Well, we're continuing to see, you know, just minor advances against our Second Amendment. I mean, there's a reason why the counties are making themselves Second Amendment sanctuary cities, right, or counties, because they see the writing on the wall. They see where our House and Senate and governor's office is going. I mean, that should never be in discussion. Why are counties doing that? Texas as a whole should be doing it.
Are you questioning anything that Legislator Patterson did that was against those Second Amendment rights? Is that part of the reason why you're running? Or you just think as a state we should be doing more?
As a state. I mean, we definitely should be doing red flag law committees.
Okay.
I mean, that to me was insane that even came up. And we just continue to fight and do more for it. And what we've seen it time and time again where good citizens that are armed save lives.
That's absolutely right.
And you're not, I mean, you know, the biggest argument, you know, criminals don't follow laws. Yeah, that's right. That's true. Because if it was, then we could just make murder illegal and it'd stop, right?
I mean, right.
That's the point of it. And, you know, you have these constant people come out trying to grab our guns and it's not going to work. And we have, I think there's like 300 million guns in America in the first place. Like, no law is ever going to take that away.
But
it's never going to happen.
Do you think that's a result of their just need to take the guns and dislike of guns? Or do you think it's because we have babies dying in schools? I mean, what do we... I mean, I get it. I don't want to hear, like, okay, well, taking guns is not a solution to, you know, a school attack. But the reality is those are people that don't want to have to know what the solutions are. They just want solutions.
Look,
and
right.
It comes down to education.
It comes down to education and parenting. Like, my kids, take my kids, for example. I mean, from the age of 3, I taught them what guns were. They knew what they were. They knew they were not a toy. They knew what they were. They respected them. So if they were found in the ditch or they went to their friend's house and pulled it, they are educated on it. They understand it. Now, protecting our schools, and I don't know what you're getting at, because I just went through this, right? We had a text message went out at Lone Star High School. My son goes to Lone Star. And that there was an active shooter, shots fired. Okay, that was the first text that I received. And I was a mile down the road. You bet I got back real quick and I was there, but I could immediately tell there was no issue just by how the officers were acting. But as a parent that's been through that, that does worry you. I get it, but there is security measures to it. And to me, it comes down to really back to the home. It comes back to being the parents, the discipline, the education side of it. That's what it comes out because you're not going to be able to protect it.
Okay,
and so people want to fight with metal detectors. I mean, metal detectors would be the worst thing you could do for a school.
So for the question for both of y'all, as legislators or possible legislator. So what do we do about the people that want to reserve the right to never own a gun, not teach their children? I mean, because I was raised the same way. I've said it 1,000 times on the show. You could put a loaded gun in the corner.
She has said it 1,000 times.
Yeah. So, but what do we do about those families that don't want that reality, will not assume that reality?
Like, because good people like me carry everywhere I can and protect them.
Because those people, in my opinion, are our legislators.
When did
problems.
You start running for legislature?
But I'm trying to compel
Sherry, here's the thing. If you don't want to carry, you don't have to carry. I'm not saying you. I'm just talking to the individual that's out there on that camera that may be watching the show. If you don't want to carry, you don't have to carry. But here's the problem. The most unsafe place to be in this nation is a gun-free zone. Most of these issues happen in gun-free zones because the bad guy knows that the good guy can't. Hold on, let me finish. Here's the other aspect of that. We passed 10 pro-Second Amendment bills this session. We didn't get the holy grail of constitutional carry. The representative that filed that bill pulled it, and we didn't get it. I believe that it was traded to pass the ban on red light cameras. But the bottom line is that we passed 10 pro-gun bills, including the bill. Did you see what happened in that church in White Settlement man took that guy out? Now, that bill was passed in 2017. That was a Matt Rinaldi bill that allowed churches to have their own security staff. But did you see the other members of the congregation that pulled their guns out? That was a bill that we passed. That was a law that went into effect September 1st of last year that we passed this past session that I voted for to allow any churchgoer to carry inside of a church. That's why those things are stopped. The length of time of a mass shooting is it ends when the next gun shows up. And that's the bottom line. And that's the part that the left has a problem acknowledging, is that the good guy with the gun stops the bad guy with the gun.
I understand that. I'm not trying to pose the question of should we have guns or not. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to pose the question of responsible gun legislature, because you said no to red flag laws. Look, I have to give my driver's license to get a box of Sudafed at CVS.
That's not your right. So, it's not your right to have a box of Sudafed. It is your right to keep and bear arms in the Constitution. Right.
Yeah, there's nothing in the Constitution that says about Sudafed.
I actually did read that article.
I get it, y'all. Trust me, I do. But the reality is we as humans and adults, when we sit here, my hometown is Santa Fe, Texas. Mm-hmm. When we sit here and we see a problem, that's why I'm trying to pose responsible legislature.
Look, Santa Fe High School, that shooting happens. I had just won the Republican primary that year. I immediately held a roundtable discussion with superintendents, with law enforcement officers, and other experts in that community to say, what can we do to improve safety in our schools? And to a person, each one of them pointed to mental health. Each one of them pointed to these things and saying, look, there's a lot of different things, but the bottom line is we don't need the state of Texas telling us exactly what each school district should do. We need the resources for training and those types of things. And that's what we did this session. We passed a massive overhaul to school safety this session, Senate Bill 11. And, that was a big win for that Dr. Greg Bonin, who carried that bill. He represents Santa Fe High School.
Let's hold it there, because that's a great place to stop. We're going to take a hard break, even though we're not leaving, so you guys are still live. Yeah. So we're going to talk about our responses right now. Well, not live.
Two things that we agree on.
There you go. We're going to talk about a couple of those things. But our show is sponsored by a couple of great sponsors. You guys don't want to know about this, living here in this great part of the state. Is Elevated Roofing, storms, right? You know James Honeycutt, those guys? Mm-hmm. They're pretty active too.
Yeah, they're good guys, strong in their faith.
They work well in the community. I mean, they're everywhere. Yeah,
so they're one of our premier sponsors. They actually came with us the first show. Then they we did a little pitch for them, and they go, we love everything that you're saying. We're all in.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of people that scam that whole roofing system. Their integrity is top notch. It's definitely something.
See, Sherry, I told you. You think I'm just lying.
You want to talk about Oklahoma? Fleets of people from Oklahoma come after a hailstorm.
I know.
You can tell they don't have all their teeth. You turn those away.
I used Elevated Roofing on my own home, and they are the most ethical, genuine people I've ever met, probably in business, what they do. And they go over the top to make sure that you were totally satisfied.
You won't be in business long.
One of the early stories I said is we started the roof tile in the back of my house, and my wife said, honey, I don't like the color. I'm like, are you kidding me? They're like, they have like 200. You're crazy. And they came over, they took it all down and they didn't complain or do anything. They gave her what she wanted. It was just incredible. So if you're looking for a good roofing company, they also do the gutters. They do the painting. They do everything. I told Sherry, you should use Elevated Painting for your house. But anyway.
Is that a knock on your house?
Well,
yeah. We won't talk about that.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that.
But contact Elevated Roofing at 469-200-0582. Tell them Common Ground sent you at 469-200-0582. And then Sherry's going to talk about Bell and Sparrows.
Bell and Sparrow is a faith-based nonprofit entity. What they do is they find women who are struggling for various reasons, whether recovering from incarceration or addiction or, you know, any form of abuse. And they take ladies and they bring them in and they help them, support them, lift them up, you know, teach them a trade, help them learn to make something and sell, you know, to support themselves. But I'm very excited. They have a new thing called Host an Event. And it's really cool because the two ladies, Lindy and Tiffany, they will literally come into your home or your work or your church, and they will help you be organized to be able to give back and to support. You know, like people like me that I'm really good and I want to do, but I just don't have the management brain. They'll actually do that. You can reach out to them and they'll come in and they'll help lead you in your group into facilitating. And then they also have Stella's Projects, which is a new thing where they're teaching trades on consumables. So the ladies that they help learn how to make and produce consumables such as the honey and sell that to the public to support themselves.
They have their own bee farm?
You know, I think so. I haven't been able to figure it out, but yeah, there's video of Lindy like harvesting the honey. It's really actually cool.
And for our audience to know, they don't pay for their own sponsorship. They actually have an anonymous donor because they don't want to take out of the funds from the charity.
Oh, that's
a really nice charity, and it empowers women, especially those in need. And if you're interested, audience, please go to their website at bellandsparrows.org. That's B-E-L-L and sparrows with an S at the end, .org. And our last sponsor, before we get back to this great discussion, is Brace Humanity. Brace Humanity, they create men's and women's bracelets. And now that Valentine's Day is right around the corner, if you go to bracehumanity.com and you put in the promo line common, you get 25% off.
I didn't know that.
That's right.
Do I get to use that?
Yes, you can.
I'm like, Make-A-Wish one and some of the other ones.
That's right. And they support Make-A-Wish Foundation. They give back to charity as well. But they have great Napa leather, Stingray leather,
cool.
Yacht ropes.
So my wife actually has one.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Just store it a lot.
I want to get the red one.
It's really cool.
And the new fluted clasps are really cool.
It's a unique thing. Like, you don't see it everywhere.
Thanks, Jared.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Helping our sponsors out. So bracehumanity.com and put in the promo word common for Common Ground, commongroundtx.com. And last thing I wanted to say is for our audience, our podcasts are now available on Spotify. So if you want to hear, we have 13 episodes up there if you missed any of those. And you could also hear them on podcast at commongroundtx.com. So we are back with legislator Jared Patterson and his challenger, James Trumbly, having a nice discussion, by the way. Thank you. I want to talk about that mental health bill since you brought it up. Mm-hmm. So it was great that we're concerned about, you know, the mental health in the school district to a point. But aren't we infringing on personal rights, which is a real Republican thing for me, you know, getting the state involved in what they're going to allow school districts to interview and determine what's good for my child from that mental health bill. So, Jared, since you were part of that, why don't you discuss that?
I'm glad that you brought that up because there's a lot of misconceptions about this piece of legislation. First and foremost, you know, it was two separate bills. Senate Bill 10 was the main mental health bill, and then Senate Bill 11 was a school safety bill. Senate Bill 10 died on the House floor. They brought back parts of it and attached as an amendment to Senate Bill 11, and that's how it all happened. So it was just parts of it. It wasn't all of Senate Bill 10. I was originally going and planning to vote against Senate Bill 10 in and of itself and voting for Senate Bill 11 because I believe so strongly in all the school safety resources that we provided in Senate Bill 11. As it relates to the school, the mental health thing, you know, keep in mind that it is illegal for anyone to diagnose or to treat your child in the state of Texas for anything outside of an emergency. And so, you know, if you have a car wreck, your arm's chopped off, they can treat your child without getting your consent. Right. But anything else, they cannot diagnose or treat your child without your consent. So really what we did, you know, Frisco ISD is so far ahead of the game. And I know you had a big part of that, Steve, but you know, Frisco ISD is so far ahead of the game from many other school districts in the state of Texas. They already have licensed psychiatrists on staff. They already have an outpatient mental health facility that they have as a vendor to the school district, so that if parents want to take advantage of those resources, they can. Now, what we did in that bill in large part was kind of mimic a lot of what Frisco ISD already has in place to other school districts around the state. So I'm certainly not in favor of infringing on any parental rights, and that's not what happened in this bill.
And what do you think about those two bills?
So from my understanding, I mean, it does, right? It's that basically red flag your child in a school and then put them in different programs, and that's kind of some of the writing of the SB10. Now, that does put government into your lives. It does take some of the parental controls away from the parents. So it is something we're more looking into and see if maybe we can tweak or change it or get it back out there. Because when it comes down to it, when a government starts getting more involved in your life, more regulations come into it, you can almost guarantee I'm going to be 100% against it, right? And that's what we're seeing here. We're seeing more of the stretch of Austin, more of the bills coming into our homes, and that's what we need to stop. Now, I think they're still working out some of the kinks on it, and people are still trying to understand completely what it's going to do. And it was a mess because SB10 was a huge bill, and then it got chopped up, like he said, and pushed into SB11. I think that's how they were able to get it passed, was because they needed certain things in there. But no, I don't like the idea of taking the parent or the control away from the parent.
Well, let me jump on that, because you know, one of the things that I worked very hard with Representative Steve Toth from north of the Houston area, we were deeply concerned about some of the language that would require school districts to also discuss, you know, quote, healthy relationships with students. And I think if you see what's happening in Austin ISD, the sex ed curriculum that was developed by Planned Parenthood, it's insane. So we, you know, this last session, we barred the local governments from contracting with abortion providers. Planned Parenthood, obviously the largest abortion provider in the United States. They have a sex ed curriculum that they were selling to school districts. So because of law that we passed saying that you couldn't contract with them, instead of selling it, Austin ISD just was allowed to plagiarize their sex ed curriculum, which does a host of things that most people don't think is even appropriate to teach children in the first, second, and third grade about some of these wild.
I know what you're speaking of.
It is horrendous.
So here's the deal. We struck language out of Senate Bill 10 that said that about school districts talking about healthy relationships between students, because we didn't want some of that stuff to creep in there. So, you know, a lot of times I feel like people are very well intentioned and they look at a bill and it scares them, and it scares me too. But you have to follow that bill all the way through the process, through every single change that it undergoes throughout the legislative process, and then judges by what the end result of that bill is.
And you want to add to that, James?
Yeah, I mean, it's just things just like this, and then not protecting or bringing stuff into schools is the reason why we got so many families going homeschooling. I mean, we have about 3 million families in Texas that are homeschooled right now just because they're scared of the ISD.
Well, yeah, we were going to talk about...
No, that's not only why.
Well, the curriculum, I think, scares a lot of people.
I think that's some of it, but no, some of it is because our schools have no ability to control what's going on because there's BS
right.
Policy and garbage.
Yeah, the STAR testing and test to a standard. Here's this curriculum, and here's this sex ed, and you know, we get told, and instead of just teaching our kids what they're supposed to. And that's why, I mean, I have a lot of friends that have that are homeschooled. You know, they take their kids out.
So what would you do, James, to change that?
If you ask me as a parent what I think the biggest problem that our schools are taxed with, it is not going to be what they're teaching my kid in sex ed. It is going to be, why on heaven's earth can a proper, responsible teacher not handle a true problem in the classroom? And the reality is because that child has rights. I mean,
well, the reality is that teachers have been stripped of all their authority.
Exactly.
Look, my mom taught school for 38 years, all in public school. My wife taught 6 years, both of her sisters, both of their husbands, all
exactly.
Teachers.
Exactly. And so what does that look like, guys? Because we're sitting here talking about, we're sitting here talking about how government shouldn't be going into the classroom. How do we get them the help that they need? I'm not necessarily against that, but what does that look like?
James, why don't you tell us what you would do to fix that?
It goes back to the ISD boards. I mean, we need to go in there.
So can't you set parameters at the state level for the, like, for example, the curriculum? There is, and I was on the school board, and yeah, there's no quote unquote common core, but we know that it makes its way in because of the textbooks that are purchased through the state. So how do we really protect the curriculum that the state really wants to provide instead of, you know, these watered down situations that I hear about and the tactics that go on. So I'll let James answer first, then we'll hear what Jared has.
So a couple of situations, I've got kids in school, right? I mean, they're in Phillips and Lone Star. So we see this. You got a few kids.
Good
in
football
there.
Team.
They are.
Yeah, and great band.
Right. An amazing band, actually.
Yep.
But we've seen it. There's kids in the class that are completely disruptive and the teachers can't do anything about it. And it hurts the entire class. And the reason why they don't do it is because they're afraid that the teachers themselves are going to be reprimanded for saying something. So it's almost like we need to do like a whistleblower, you know, law for them to protect the teachers from when they actually do, you know, say, hey, this child is a disruptor to the class. This is what they're doing. We need help for it. And that she doesn't get, or he or she doesn't get reprimanded for it. I mean, teachers are scared to say anything about some of the students.
And how would we change that in Austin? How can we?
It'd be some kind of bill, the effect of a whistleblower. Something similar to that.
And Jerry?
You know, I've been really involved in, you know, different elections on the local level. And I know James has a lot of opinions here on property taxes at the city level, on different policies that our school district should do and all that. The problem is that he just didn't have a history of supporting any candidates that would affect that change. I mean, the bottom line is that, you know, I go and I vote and I support conservative candidates and I donate money to Republican candidates and conservatives and I show up at the polls and I vote. And James has never voted in his life. I mean, you look at the opinions that he has about, you know, what should happen on the city level, what should happen in the state level, what should happen. Where were those opinions, you know, over the course of the last year or two when he was here in Frisco and all these things were going on? You know, you look at the constitutional election that we had last November. You know, we had the ability to ban a statewide income tax in the state of Texas, a bill that I co-authored in the Texas House. And, you know, it was, you know, there's opportunities to have input, and he's running for office now, and that's wonderful. You know, that's a great freedom that we have in this country that he fought for. And I respect the heck out of your service to our country. But, you know, you can also show up at the polls and vote and get your opinion.
I was going to say, I need to know about this pat on the back bill.
Well, besides the pat on the back bill, why don't you answer the first part? I guess he's.
Look, I spent 14 years overseas, 14 years of straight deployments. I have over 9 years of actual on ground time in a combat zone during combat operations. My schedule was I'd be home for 30 to 45 days and then 3 to 6 months overseas. That was my schedule for 14 years. So I wasn't involved here, right? I was part of what I would consider a group project. You know, God put me on that path to serve my country, and that was my project. That's what I was doing. I was doing honorably with integrity, courage, and commitment just to come home to find out the other members of our group were not. I mean, a lot of them were selling off this very freedom that we're fighting for. And immediately when I came home, I came home because my mom was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And that's why I quit my job overseas. And we talked about it earlier. She passed in 2017. And when I did come back to the community and actually planted here.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. I did start getting involved in the community immediately. Because, you know, I want people to understand that just because we separate from the service, my drive and passion to serve others doesn't separate from me. So I started getting involved in the American Legion, which I'm an officer on, the VFW, local nonprofits. I worked with the Dallas VA. I did some stuff with the homeless veterans. You know, I worked with transitioning veterans into the civilian world. I mean, I did start getting involved. And that's where I started seeing the politics, because the politics, they're in everything, right? It doesn't matter what you do. You eventually get there. And then we started looking at the bigger picture of like, yeah, there is an issue here. Like, we have a problem and we need to continue to fight and make sure we can continue to grow and do what we need to do here. And so that's what threw me into this race in the first place. I mean, I did get asked by quite a bit of constituents to run against Jared. And there was a series of events that happened that caused that. You know,
which ones?
So the process, you know, the construction bill was a big one.
Okay.
Right. And I know he probably wish he could take that one back. You know, given the power to Austin to control the local government is something we never want to do. Comes back from the last session and he was.
I want to talk about the construction bill because that was on my list too. But what's the other one that you wanted to you were asked?
There's a list for it. I mean, if you're on a pause.
Well, the top two, because we only have an hour. So,
so we technically only have like 25 minutes.
Right. So, no, he did come out of the session and he was bragging about how great a session it was when it wasn't. I mean, we didn't get the meaty stuff that we wanted to, and there's no reason not to because we own the House and the Senate and the governor's office.
So what else would you have liked to see besides a constitutional carry? You mentioned that one. What else was the other one?
Right. Well, still, the reason why we decided to get into this race, you know, a lot of constituents were bothered, as I am, about, again, him being the Democrats' favorite freshman. His best friend is one of the Democrats in the House, you know, and then the support of Dennis Bonin across the ranks.
Okay.
I mean, we saw it.
That's a handful. So let's start first with the construction bill. We'll give you a minute to answer that because I have to hear about this other stuff too.
You know, James talks about all these people from the district that encouraged him to come back and run. But, you know, he picked up, he was running against Len Stuckey over in Denton, you know, pretending that he lived in Denton and was running against Len Stuckey, trashing him terribly, saying terribly personal things about his relationship with his wife, which couldn't be further from the truth, saying things about his business.
Well, let's stay
there. Hold on. This gets there. So he's run against Len Stuckey for 3 months, and the lady that's funding his campaign yanked his chain and put him back on me in my race. And how I know that is that despite breaking Texas ethics laws and not filing his report on time, we did ultimately find out 2 days after the deadline that, you know, a couple of weeks after he files against Len Stuckey, $12,500 from one donor funding his campaign. 2 weeks after he switches races to me, $25,000 from the same funder. In fact, 82.4% of the money that James has raised is from one personal donor that does not live in the district. So when he says all these people from the district asked him to come back, he was talking about Frisco at the time. It's like, well, there's no endorsements from any leadership in Frisco. There's one or two, I think, campaign contributions from the district.
Okay, on his finance report. I was going to say that's a lot. James needs
go ahead. James, respond to that. Is it true that you were running against Stuckey and then came back?
He was absolutely the first campaign, and to defend Stuckey, that's horrible. He's got a worse record than Jared does. So I mean, if you want to.
But I mean, just answer what he said. Is that
right? So the process of what happened is when that was before the whole Bonin stuff broke out. Right. So when all the Bonin stuff looked out, and we saw that, you know, Jared's one of the biggest supporters and he defended him all the way through. We didn't condemn his actions until after Bonin announced he wasn't seeking re-election. We know his office called your office. So we know that. So then we started getting calls and like, James, you know, we got to run here. This is you lived here for 13 years. This is a better district. This is your backyard. This is what that's going on. So I was about 50-50 on that because, again, we have a lot of rhinos in the House that we need to get rid of. Right. I mean, it is across the board. And you know, I'll bring up the phone call. I mean, the second that I have an elected official call me and try to intimidate me to silence another freedom-loving American who was also a veteran, that's unacceptable.
So the bottom line is you switched to come to run against Jared because of the Bonin situation.
Yes. That was the big part.
Okay, go ahead. Answer the Bonin situation, Jared.
So I think it's pretty telling. You know, his political team got together and said, this is a better district to run for. So, you know,
he's seat shopping.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he's seat shopping.
Sure.
He's going to run over here. Then he comes back to run over here, you know, trying to get in the Texas House. Look, I never defended Bonin publicly one time at all. I said that we had a great session. He was obviously the speaker of the session.
He was the smartest person in the room. And that you'd still support him as a speaker of the House.
I did, but, and that was all before the tape came out. That was all before the tape came out. Look, I released a series of statements, the first of which was right after the Republican House caucus met down in Austin. I released two or three statements. What's funny is that, you know, when James was running against Len Stuckey and trashing Len Stuckey, he was still doing stuff in Frisco. So I was like, this is kind of weird. We had met for coffee one day after he announced that he was running against Len Stuckey. And I was trying to fill him out, see, you know, what he was running for and why and all that kind of stuff. And then I'm speaking at the UND College Republicans meeting over in Denton. And I noticed James kind of sitting there.
I recorded the meeting.
With his phone, like sitting on his, like who sits with their phone like that? So, you know, I make a little joke about, you know,
just record it.
Is anyone recording this? Because, you know, the Bonin thing. So I make a little joke about it. And then, you know, he fumbles with his phone. And so then the next week, his campaign consultant's coming after me on Facebook. And so I'm like, well, this is weird. So I call James. I'm like, hey, man, I'm like, are we good? Like, you're filming me at a meeting. Your campaign consultant's coming, which doesn't happen.
Exactly.
Your campaign consultant's coming after me on Facebook. Now, Sherry, you and I have had pretty large disagreements in the past.
Oh, that's putting it nicely.
Have I ever tried to intimidate you? Would you say?
No.
I mean, that's a big recipe putting that in your hands. But
yes,
you here's
know
the deal.
Because if you had, I'd call you right out. Right
James,
now,
James is a Marine. They have written
I
articles.
You intimidated me. I said that you had attempted to, the way your voice was. It was like one of those things where you forget to take out the trash and your wife's about to yell at you, but not quite there. That was the tone of the discussion. and to tell me that I don't need this BS on my page. I blocked him and deleted him, which is another one. You continue to block people off your page who just give you any kind of pushback, which is ridiculous.
You can go on there and look at comments right now. But listen, somebody's campaign consultant coming after me on Facebook, that doesn't happen.
He said that you're a little late to this show because Dennis Bond already announced he wasn't seeking re-election. That's what he posted on his Facebook. And that's what got him all hyped up on it.
Because it was his consultant, not Joe Blow.
It just doesn't give you the right to call somebody and try to do that.
Do you think the average voter and those teachers and firefighters you're talking about, do you think they even know who Bonin is and what he did?
No, that's the thing. Even his own district, only 32% of the people in Bonin. And that's
kind of my point,
but that's the mentality, though. That's the career politician mentality that is destroying politics and spinning Texas out of control. That's the issue.
Yeah,
and it goes through the voting side of it. It goes through what he's been doing. He's has other people call, people who support me, to try to either shame them or intimidate them to switch back.
Isn't that really part of the game, though? And I'm not saying whether you're...
I would never do that.
I'm not saying you would, but when I ran, you know, people would try and talk me out of it or try and get me to do certain things. I mean, that's just the political atmosphere. I'm not saying he did or he didn't, and I don't condone it.
Right.
But I'm saying I believe from what I've seen that it happens. Okay. I'm not saying he should have or shouldn't have. I'm not saying he did or he didn't.
It's not a belief, it is a fact.
It happens
from
all the
everybody,
time.
All parties.
And on the other side of it, Jared, I mean, a lot of candidates look around to see the best window they can step in to get into the political scene, too. So
absolutely. No, that's 100% true. You know, I think it's weird. It's like I've never heard of anyone in the state running against another state rep, trashing him, and then running against. I mean, even if he did win, he claims all these things that he's going to get done, yet he doesn't believe in building bridges. He doesn't believe in working with anyone. He's trashed Lynn Stuckey. So Lynn Stuckey's whole crew, they're not going to work with him. My crew's not going to work with him. I mean, I was able to go down there, navigate a very complicated process, be the eighth most conservative member of the Texas House out of 150, pass four bills into law.
But then I did win.
Is there someone that's the fastest turtle in the race? I mean, eighth place is a participation trophy. And that kind of session, that purple session, how are you not at least one or second? I mean,
well, how many Republican legislators are there?
Freshmen, actually. So as a
I don't know how many Republicans were there.
There's 150 members of the House. There's 83 Republicans.
So he's in the top 10%.
I'm in the top 5.3% of Republican members in terms of my record. Now, look, he wants to minimize co-authoring bills, joint authoring bills.
Well, I don't think he said that either.
Yeah, and he said you can sit there and co-author a bill or push a button. The thing is, that's putting your name on the line, your reputation on the line. That's fighting back. I voted no 621 times on the House floor. 621 times I went against leadership. I went against.
But that's doing your job.
And I did my job.
When I go into a
I mean,
that's why this is my answer.
In my world, when I go into a house and I shoot 100 rounds, I don't get a trophy for the 99 rounds I hit the target. I'm accountable for that one round that I miss. That's what I'm accountable for. So all those votes of doing the right thing, that's not something you should get awarded for. That's your job. It's the wrong ones. It's when you vote to raise our taxes, vote to raise our budget, vote in the Democrats' favorite freshman.
What tax did I vote to increase?
You don't remember that when you were in the city council? Funny.
You're talking about in the state house, I voted to raise taxes?
You voted to raise taxes when you were in the city council.
I voted to implement a bond package that the voters approved. I was constitutionally obligated to vote to raise taxes.
So you voted to raise the budget.
Okay, let me ask you this. Voted to take control away
from the local government and give it to Austin.
That's not true.
Construction bill?
That's not giving control to Austin. You know what we did to local governments? I'm a former city council member. I know that government closest to the people is best. We didn't centralize government in Austin. We gave power back to the people. What we said is that local governments can't discriminate you based on your religious beliefs. What we said is that local governments can't fund abortion providers because people don't want that.
Y'all don't even get me started. We'll need another hour for that.
James just hit the nail on the head. I went down to Austin and I did not solve every issue that ails us as a state. I'll raise my right hand and say I agree with that statement.
Newsflash to both of y'all, you're never going to rid abortion in any state.
I don't think he means just abortion. He means in general, he didn't come down to Austin.
I know, but he said we are still having abortions in Texas. Right. I don't care what laws you pass. We're always going to have them, in my opinion.
Unfortunately, we're getting close to the end of the show. So I'm going to give each one of you a couple minutes to just say a little bit about yourself. And you should really say, and I'm not telling you how to say it, but what separates you from each other so that our audience could say, you know what, okay, I heard what they had to say and you know, this guy said this and that guy said that. So, James, why don't you start out? Thank you again for being with us today and just give us a couple minutes of a summary about you and your campaign.
Sure. Again, about me, I'm not a career politician. This isn't something I ever thought I'd be into. You know, I feel like it's a service that I need to step up and do, just like the rest of my life. I mean, I have a career, you know, a proven career of service. And this is something I really is passionate about. And I'm doing it because, again, it's the politics at our front door, right? That's what matters. It's the taxes. It's what affects us at our driveway or front door. All right, let me talk about bonding earlier. That's, most people don't know about that. I get that. But we need to do more for our district. And I'm fighting to get that appraisal district taken care of. We need to stop having good families being taxed right out of their home. I mean, it's happening. It's not something I'm making up. It's happening every single day. And that's a big part of it. Now, I am a fighter, and that's what I plan on doing. And building bridges and doing relationships, getting things done, that's what I've been doing for 14 years in some of the most biggest government agencies that we have in the United States. Right? I do know what it's like. I do know what it's like to be in the trenches, having, you know, 50 different bosses and trying to get something through. Like, I get it. I know how that works. That appeasement isn't always the answer for that. So the biggest thing to me is, again, I'm not a career politician. I didn't check all the boxes for the last 14 years to advance my political career. I'm here for the people. I'm tired of seeing the way our state is going, the way America is going. And I want to make sure that when my kids have the ability to grow up in the same Texas that we love today. And that's why I'm running. That's why I'm passionate about this.
Okay. And if people want to know more about you, where can they find that information?
Absolutely. You can go to my website, TrombleyForTexas.com. We're also on Facebook. You can just look up Trombley for Texas as well.
Okay, great. And Jared Patterson, tell us your summary of 2 minutes. Thank you again for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having us. I think it was a good debate, or actually a good discussion. I mean, I think that what you saw is that there really aren't that many disagreements that we have on the issues, other than, he wants the government to be in your business on selling your property and have a California-style property tax system, and I don't. I went down to Austin. I served my first term. I'm not a career politician. I'm in the middle of my first term in the Texas House. I did exactly what I said I would do. I campaigned as a deeply conservative individual, as a lifelong Republican. I was the eighth most conservative member of the Texas House out of 150, the top 5.3% of members. I fought for conservative issues. I voted to lower your property taxes in Frisco SD by 11 cents. I voted to better fund our public schools. I voted for the most substantial overhaul to our property tax system in a generation. I voted to spend $800 million on border security. I voted to ban taxpayer-funded abortions. I voted for more than 10 bills related to the Second Amendment, strengthening that. We have the strongest campus free speech bill now as a result of this last session. We really struck a chord on human trafficking this session, increasing awareness, increasing training, increasing penalties for those who traffic. We increased religious liberties for people. We spent a lot of money on cancer research this session. So we did a lot of good things this session, and that's my record. That's what I did, and I'm proud of what I did.
And where can they find out more about you, Jared?
My website is jaredpatterson.net. I spend a lot of time there, and then also you can find on Facebook at facebook.com/jpattersontx.
Well, I want to thank James Trombley and Jared Patterson for coming on the show. I think it was a good discussion. Hopefully our audience got a lot out of it. And Sherry, we've got a good one coming up next week, don't we? Why don't you preview that one for our audience?
It's going to be the open seat for City Council.
Frisco City Council. We have the candidates for the open seat coming on the show.
It's place five.
Place five. Dan Strickland, Ram Maji, Harvard Johnston.
And Josh Meek.
Everybody
Williams. Around one table?
Everybody. Yeah, we have extra mics that we set up. I think there is. We haven't found them.
But
we're trying.
If that person sees this video, yep.
If
I'm
you
right
hear
here to reach
Sherry
out to
Salas
me.
Or noskin.comagran@gmail.com. So thank you, everybody else, for listening. Everybody have a great day. God bless. Everybody take care.
Thank you.
Bye now.